Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, my Warriors 2. There is Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Hello.
And writer for The Film Stage, Danny King.
Hey.
Hey.
I've been somewhat sick this past week. I've had a cough, and so my voice might sound a little scratchier, a little more jazzy.
A little husky, a little smoky.
Just coming up next, we have Louis Armstrong on the dial.
All right, sing this little light of mine.
Like one jazz musician, and then I go with the most popular.
So. I was thinking Miles Davis. You could have gone Coltrane, Thelonious Monk.
Sure. I was thinking Hemsworth. Just in terms of Thor.
That is not a jazz musician, however.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
God. All right. Anyway, now that we know that Danny doesn't know anything about jazz, let's move on. This is a podcast that is not about jazz. It is, in fact, about movies. And this week, we will be having a featured review of Thor the Dark World, sequel to Thor, no subtitle. And, yeah, one of the many movies leading up to the second Avengers film, which is really how you just have to look at all Marvel movies now. And we'll get into that in the review. But, yeah, that's what we'll be talking about. That stars Chris Hemsworth, Natalie Portman, Tom Hiddleston, and Anthony Hopkins. Before we get into that, we'll be having a film discussion. This week it'll be centered around the news that Blockbuster will be closing all of its physical locations. I know that many of you maybe thought that happened already because you haven't seen one in 3 years, but there were apparently still some up and running, and it's over. Blockbuster is thrown in the towel. Brick-and-mortar national chain of video stores is dead. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to share our recollections and what Blockbuster meant to us all in memoriam. After both of those things, the discussion and the main review are over, we'll give you our choices for what's coming to DVD, Blu-ray, and theaters next week, as well as a random selection of something that we watched on our own this week. Before we get into all that, let me say that you should go to iTunes, give us a comment and a rating, let us know how we're doing. You can also go to our post on the Film Stage Show and talk to us there. And if you need to talk to us further, podcast@thefilmstage.com. You can send us an email and we will read it and address it on air or in private, depending on what you're talking about. So thanks to everyone who has done that. We're currently at a 5-star rating on iTunes. So if you'd like us to keep that rating, go there and comment. If you think that we don't deserve that rating, I guess go there and comment and rate us as well. Though I personally think we deserve that, but I am biased. Biased as hell. So let's get into.
Are you just biased because you're the host?
I mean, I would think so.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm not going to put my name on something that I don't think is 5-star worthy.
Got it.
I once made a grilled cheese sandwich for my nephew. I had to throw out 3 of them before I finally served him one. He was angry. Anyway, let's get into our primary discussion. Before we get into Thor, like I said, we'll be talking about Blockbuster Video. Blockbuster Video, which was a behemoth, a national retailer that rented out videos and DVDs. It got in trouble when Netflix started up, and now this week we learned that it will actually be closing almost all of its company-owned stores. There are apparently 50 franchise outlets that will stay open, but you know, God only knows what that's going to lead to. So the company itself is over. No more will you be able to walk into a store, a Blockbuster store, and rent a video. I know that there are many independent film rental stores still open, and so we could talk about that at the end of this. But I just wanted to kind of talk about our own personal histories with Blockbuster and what Blockbuster meant to us, because since we are movie lovers, I'm assuming that we all spent a lot of time in a Blockbuster at one point in our lives. So I just wanted to kind of use this as a way to give our final respects to a company and a store that, for me at least, was a huge part of my movie loving experience. So Nick Newman, why don't you tell us about your past with Blockbuster?
I used to go to Blockbuster almost every week, believe it or not. I mean, I guess that's actually pretty easy to believe, generally speaking. As a young man, I used to go to Blockbuster quite often, and I guess my experience, my memories are actually mostly positive, where I'd go on like a Friday or a Saturday night and I'd rent a movie. I'd watch it and et cetera, et cetera. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I'd rent like Airplane or The Naked Gun, for instance. I was able to find those movies through there. That was sort of a nice experience. I'd rent, I'd rent like a new release. I'd rent, I think I rented Rushmore from there. Just sort of these movies that kind of growing up, I sort of meant a lot to me. And that was good, but as well as their video game selection too, that was always, that was nice to have, especially when you could beat a game during your rental period.
Oh yeah.
You know, you save money. It's great. And yet I did find that, as I got older, I realized that Blockbuster really wasn't that great, not just because they had bad business practices. That's one thing, but simply because their selection wasn't terribly extensive. It was mostly new releases, and you got shafted a bit. I mean, sure, I could discover like a lot of Coen Brothers movies through that outlet, but and that was like one thing that I appreciated, for instance. But if I wanted to go any deeper than that, you're kind of hedging your bets a bit. And then, especially when I when I got a Netflix account in like the 8th grade. That was the point where I went, okay. So yeah, like this is clearly not like there's a lot of cinema outside of the Blockbuster stock, isn't there? I mean, now like I guess I don't really. And there's also the thing about their selection is this pertains to also one of their more controversial things is how many businesses they shuttered. I remember when I was a kid, I would. I think this was like maybe like the summer like 2001 or something. I rented all the Planet of the Apes movies on VHS. this was before the Tim Burton remake came out. And I remember they didn't have them at Blockbuster. I think they only had like the first movie. But if I wanted to see, if I wanted to see Beneath the Planet of the Apes or Escape, Conquest, Battle for, I went to the other video store and they had them there. And it was great. And so I would say I have fonder memories of my shorter visits to, I think it was like Family Video or something or whatever called.
Okay.
Back, you know, by the KFC and the CVS in East Fishkill. I have fonder memories of going there than Blockbuster. So it's too bad that there are people out of work, obviously. But in terms of like the company going under, I mean, I feel like maybe this is sort of a victory for a more sort of a more hungry market in a way,
it can definitely be read that way.
Because companies like Netflix give you so much, and yeah, it's also the way they give it to you as well.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, I'm not very nostalgic for Blockbuster, and I'm not very sad. I see people saying like, they're spinning a sonnet about their time at Blockbuster on Twitter. And I think to myself, I mean, you didn't care about Blockbuster a week ago, so shut up. So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Okay.
Everybody just shut up. That's basically it.
All right, Danny King, what about yourself?
Wow, that's quite a start.
We're not going to shut up because that's what we're talking about.
It's been a while since I've, even thought about Blockbuster, so I can't say I'm like feeling like I want to write a sonnet about the company. But I definitely have positive memories of it. I think, like Nick, I sort of made the most use out of it as a kid, maybe during like middle school before I before our family got like a Netflix account. But some funny memories are like, I remember when I was a kid, our family used to play that game, like Seen It.
Okay.
You guys ever play that game?
Yeah.
And so, like, I think sometimes I would, like, when I would go to the store and I'd, like, recognize movies from the game, like, that would be kind of a fun thing. Like, I remember one movie that kept coming up in the game was, like, A Clockwork Orange. And, like, I think I probably noticed it in the store, like, for a couple of years before I even had any idea what it was. But, like, I'd always walk by it and be like, oh, that's the Seen It movie. Like, it's probably, like, a board game. And then one funny thing about like the video store experience, which actually for me hasn't really changed with Netflix, is like sometimes when I go home and my family's sitting around the TV and we're like surfing through Netflix Instant for something to watch, it'll be like a half hour or like 45 minutes before we decide, like before we can all agree on something. And I remember like going to the store, going to Blockbuster with my parents, and like we didn't really have any goal in mind of what we wanted to rent. So like we would literally walk through every row, and like at the end of it, I'd be like, okay, I have like 10 movies that I'd be interested in renting. And then my parents would be like, all right, well, we've been here for an hour, so like pick one, because I'm like getting sick of this goddamn store. And that was, you know, that was a funny family event, just to go there on Saturday afternoon and look through all the films. But yeah, certainly in the last few years, there are better resources. And I don't even think I live by a Blockbuster anymore. The one I went to as a kid shut down. I think there might still be a Family Video, but I'm not sure.
I think that's a more, I think that's just a more commonplace name.
Family Video?
Like this place I went to, I doubt was a chain. Like it was just, I think it was just called like Family Video or something.
Okay. Because I know I have like a friend who like, he lives near Family Video. So like every other time I went to a video store, it'd be Blockbuster. But if I was like with him, it would be Family Video. And I feel like we went fairly recently.
Okay.
Yeah, so no more Blockbusters. Quite the event.
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up as a little kid, my family didn't go to the theater that often. So if I wanted to see a new movie, I had to wait until it hit the Blockbuster. So it was always a big deal for me, because that was how I was seeing most of my movies for the first time. And then as I grew up and I started to look for other films, I would have to... It was a delicate dance that I danced. I had to find films that my parents would rent for me that they either knew about and had no idea what they were actually about, or that I could just kind of like figure out my own way around. For instance, I saw Tim Roth's The War Zone, which if you've seen that, you know is probably not a film for children.
Absolutely not.
I mean, you could show it to your children and kind of like get them to understand.
I was like 12 things. Or 13 at the time. Like, it was probably not a good idea for me to see this film. But anyway, I saw it because the poster on the front of the VHS box was just like a bunker on a moor, and it, you know, it's called The War Zone, and like, well, I guess it's about a war. Nope, totally not. So that was like one of my things to do. As I grew up and could start driving myself around, my friends and I would go to the Blockbusters all the time, and it would kind of be our weekend thing. On Friday, we would head over to the Blockbuster, we'd pick up some video games and some movies, and that's what we would do with ourselves. And as I started to learn more about film, it's funny that you say that there was not a large selection, because at the Blockbuster that I would go to when I was on my last 2 years in high school in Texas, they had like... everything. Like I was able to see The Rat Catcher, Straw Dogs, Seven Samurai. Like they did their best to have a very deep and essential collection there.
Well, I don't know, everything's bigger in Texas.
It is true. That is very true. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about all that. I quite enjoyed just about every aspect of it. And I mean the thing is, as you go and you look at the way that Netflix came about, I mean, Netflix was definitely the better choice. But sort of like when Borders closed, and now I don't really have a book or a DVD store near me, like, I miss that. I miss being able to go and just get lost meandering, you know, like spending an hour in the store picking over everything. There's something like, there was the joy of discovery there. And having something in your hands and not being able to like look at reviews and just having to go off the box and your very thin knowledge at that time of what made a good film, and then just kind of diving in. I remember that I made a bunch of friends watch the movie Secretary. Many of them were quite angry at me for that. but I enjoyed the hell out of it. And it was because, you know, no one had a way of trying to counterman me. I mean, we didn't have smartphones, we didn't have anything. Like, it was just like, hey, look at this box. This looks incredible, right?
Blockbuster is all we had.
Yeah, basically. I mean, where else were you going to go? Like, I lived in the suburbs outside of Baltimore. Like, you know, you didn't want to drive all the way in there just to go to the Charles Theater. I guess there was the place in Annapolis, but even that was not that great. So, I mean, what we had was Blockbuster. That was our gateway. That was our only means of escaping out of what was in the multiplexes to see something else. So for a long time, all of my independent film, you know, hunger was sated by going to Blockbuster, where they would have, like, you know, the two, if you remember how Blockbuster was set up, they had, like, the sections on the wall, and they would have, like, two sections filled with Titanic, and then randomly there'd be, like, two copies of whatever small independent film came out. Luckily, those copies were always there. And, yeah, I mean, that's where I got most of my movies from, back in the day, back when, life was harder and we didn't have VOD, and holy fuck, do I feel old.
I remember,
that's not too early to start drinking, right?
That's a little early.
You know what, Danny, I don't trust you.
I remember one movie, sort of like your Warzone experience, that I always, like, came across and would pause in front of was Sexy Beast. I couldn't ask my parents when I was like 11 or something to rent me Sexy Beast. But what's ironic is that movie it's not about sex or whatever. So
it is about beasts.
It's about a beastly man. Correct.
I mean, yeah, I think probably is sexy. Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does anyone else miss that though? Like, actually being able to go in somewhere and, like, kind of Russian rouleting it.
I guess so, but that's not really, to me, that's not, specific necessarily to Blockbuster. Like, I had other stores that were better. That's the thing. I had stores that were better and they were gone because
Hollywood Video. So, I mean, like,
okay. And then they were gone because of Blockbuster, which is why now that Blockbuster itself is gone, I'm kind of like, well, you kind of brought it upon yourself because you didn't adapt and you stuck to your bad business model. I just don't have much to say. Clearly, I don't have much to say. Much good, I'll say. You know.
Speaking of that, the smaller video stores. Yeah, it was sad. There was a place in Tacoma Park, which is a bastion of retired hippies just outside of Washington D.C., and it was called Video Americaine. And it was one of those places that had, like, the really obscure stuff. I remember going in there once, and they had the TV where they would just play a random movie. And they were playing White Dog.
Oh,
like,
nice.
It was that kind of place. And unfortunately, they closed January of this year. So, yeah.
Too bad.
It's sad. I mean, things like that. You know, I'm gonna miss them. They were a community place. It was nice, but
yeah. In terms of video stores, I know that there's one place. If we have any hip, sexy Brooklyn listeners, there is a place called Video Free Brooklyn, which I've heard very good things about. Mm-hmm. So I will say that I don't know. Maybe the video store model can come back in some way now that Blockbuster is gone.
Yeah.
Maybe there will be a brighter future for something better.
Maybe. All right. Well, that's our elegy, our ode to the video stores of yesteryear.
Yeah.
If you have any memories you'd like to share, find us on the film stage and let us know. Maybe we'll share someone if anyone has any interesting stories. If not, then we don't hear anything from anyone. We'll never talk about this again. So let's get into our primary review, which this week is Thor, The Dark World, which was directed by Alan Taylor and stars Chris Hemsworth, Natalie Portman, Tom Hiddleston, Anthony Hopkins, Jamie Alexander, Ray Stevenson, Idris Elba, Rene Russo, Kat Dennings, and Stellan Skarsgård.
And Chris O'Dowd.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Should have
been more of
little,
him.
Little tiny part.
After all this time, now you come to visit me, brother. Why? To mock.
I need your help. But I wish I could trust you.
If you did, you'd be the fool I always took you for.
Some believe that before the universe, there was nothing. They're wrong. There was darkness, and it has survived.
So glad.
Dark World, sequel to Thor, the sequel to Avengers. This is directed by Alan Taylor, who's primarily been doing TV before this. Apparently the newest thing for the Marvel movies, now that they know they're guaranteed to make money, is to get TV directors, because I know that the new Captain America movie is going to be directed by, I think they're from Community, primarily.
Yeah, that's correct. Joe and Anthony Russo.
Yeah, Joe and Anthony Russo, primarily from Community. Alan Taylor, primarily from Game of Thrones, though he's also been director in a bunch of other stuff. I mean, it's all quality television. I mean, I love Community. I like Bored to Death. He also did Rubicon, Nurse Jackie, Mad Men, The Sopranos. I mean, like, the guy has some meaningful stuff.
But I had a weird moment where I looked up his filmography, and I realized I've seen more of his work than, like, most other directors. It was really weird, because I've seen 24-hour-long TV episodes that he's done. 24. Like, that's not an insignificant amount.
No.
And then now there's this film, which is, like, 100 minutes, so... Keeps adding up.
I wonder how many I've seen. I got 7 and 2. That's 9. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 19. Jesus.
are there any
23, and I've seen 29 hours of television that this man has done. And then Thor the Dark World.
Yeah.
And he's apparently also directed Terminator. Anyway, so Alan Taylor... Television director brought to the screen to direct Thor the Dark World, which is about...
Can you say? I can't say.
I don't know. It's about some bad people trying to do some bad things, and Thor's trying to stop them. And, I don't know. This is one of the problems with this film. It's a problem that the first Thor had, too. Is that you can't... It's not really... It's not a story. There's some stuff that's happening. And then in the first film, however, you had an emotional arc for the hero to go through. Because you could say in the first film, it was like frost giants, temporal portals, Shakespearean familial like power struggle. But what it really was about a man learning to become what was necessary to be in order to be a king.
To save Asgard.
Yeah. It's like his arc was being able to pick up Mjolnir, the hammer, because only then would people know that he was the man who deserved to reign power. And in this film, it's really like enemy X is attempting to do terrible thing Y, and we have to stop them somehow. And the plot to stop them is constantly shifting, and it's kind of a mess. Natalie Portman is shoehorned back in there after being summarily shuffled off to an island during the Avengers. And, I don't know, man. Like, I just was not... I guess if you couldn't figure it out by now. I wasn't, like, a huge fan of this. I mean, I wasn't terribly bored during most of it, but... As much as I really liked the first Thor. Like, I liked Captain America most of all, and then Thor second of all, because I enjoyed the emotional stakes that Thor was dealing with. Like, there was, like, an actual romance that I kind of got, and there was the familial stuff. And so whenever they stuck to that, I was fine. But this movie has a backstory involving... like a pre-universe race of creatures called the Dark Elves, which is really just like the most lazy name for a villain that you could
I think you're just afraid to confront like where our universe came from.
Okay.
Like these Dark Elves.
Obviously.
Are like in our heritage.
It's just like it starts off with a voiceover, which is always kind of terrifying to me, and it's filling me in on this like grand story that seems a lot more interesting than the story we're looking at here, and that just that's not even like tied to something. It's not even like you're seeing this story get read to Thor as a baby, like in a crib or something. It's just there, and then it's gone. And then you go into another battle scene, and Thor is apparently making the Nine Realms peaceful again. He's bringing order now that the Bifrost is back. And if you, like, I've already had to say so many things that I never thought I would have to say. So, Nick Newman, what did you think of Thor: The Dark World? Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, no, to be honest, I was actually kind of, it's weird, I was kind of disappointed by this movie, which is strange.
Like, you had expectations?
No, I've said before that, you know, I actually have a pretty positive impression of the first Thor movie. It's probably my favorite of these Marvel cinematic universe motion pictures. And I was kind of like, yeah, I could do another, you know, with Tom Hiddleston and Chris Hemsworth, and I guess Natalie Portman's fine, but I could sort of imagine a scenario where someone called her up on the phone like a year and a half ago, and she said, "What? I was in Thor? Like, oh, they're gonna make another one? Oh, okay." And then like she watched the first Thor, kind of like to remind herself that she was in it. And that, yeah, I mean, the whole movie to me, it's not just that it's kind of, it's sort of narratively discombobulated, but that it's also just it's a little dull, I think. There isn't really much of any conflict here. It's sort of – it's so scattershot, and it is so incidental. It's so based on what is going to happen at any given moment that there's no real arc to it.
Yeah.
It feels very – it just feels very manic, which I don't get. I don't understand why this movie is just jumping around – time and time again, and yet it feels long.
It's
like the movie is let's see, the runtime is 112 minutes, and the Avengers was like half an hour longer, but that actually went by quicker.
Yes,
because that had, maybe it's because there was, you know, more characters, there was some pizzazz with the dialogue and whatnot. Here it's just mostly exposition and kind of I mean, for instance, you know, I feel like a lot of the movie can be summed up with the Kat Dennings character, if you can call her a character. every line she has is a one-liner, or it is some kind of irritating response to a weird situation, like, oh my, well, that was weird. And it's really fucking annoying. It is. And I don't understand, like, why you even bother with a character like that? What purpose is it serving? It's almost like because she was in the first movie, so oh, let's bring her back. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are good moments. Tom Hiddleston is actually quite excellent. I feel like he's probably too good for this.
Oh,
in a way.
I mean, yeah, he walks away handily with every scene that he's in.
Right, and Chris Hemsworth is good too, although he's, it feels like he's barely in the film. It's a movie called Thor, and it feels like Thor is barely a character in it. Well, because there's all this other stuff. There's like Stellan Skarsgård running around naked. You have Chris O'Dowd shows up for a bit. He's fun, but maybe they should just made a movie about him. Not only that, but I didn't see Iron Man 3, so I can't really comment on how this works, but didn't you find it kind of weird that people seem so accepting of what happened in the Avengers? Like, people aren't just looking around going, holy shit!
This is the exact same problem I had with goddamn Iron Man 3.
Because you think
Iron
about
Iron Man 3 was like the first movie after the Avengers, and like there were like two glancing references of New York.
There were two glancing references to the alien invasion of New York that was stopped by a giant green radioactive scientist.
Rage monster.
Yeah,
and then a god of Norse legend,
right?
And then a man who's been frozen for 7 years. Like, I don't get it.
That's the thing, is that, you know, like Thor, the character of Thor should change humanity's entire understanding of its existence.
Right, but there's still cops pointing guns at him.
Right, because he's a Norse god. Like, he he throws into question everything
yeah.
that people know. And yet it's just kind of like people are like, ooh, what big muscles you have.
Yeah, oh, you're still so muscly. I mean, here's like, because you think about that, it's like, okay, well, if the Norse had Thor, then what about, like, is there, like, a giant dragon out there, like, craving human blood called Quetzalcoatl? Like,
well, the movie, okay, the movie has a post-credit sequence, right? It's the last shot. It's played as a joke. It's played it as is. A laugh.
And it got a laugh out of me, but, and then I was like, wait a second.
The movie completes its arc in a post-credit sequence.
That's the crazy thing. I'm gonna, we'll talk about it in spoilers, but yeah, like, one of my major problems with this film is, like I said about the last film, the romance was the most affecting aspect of it. And it ended on a note that really completed the arc still. And then the Avengers scuttled that, and then this movie returns to it, but it's all just retroactive, like, you know, oh, you were in New York, and then you left again, but you were here, and why didn't you find me? And he's like, well, I had some shit to do, I'm sorry. And, like, she gets over it pretty quickly. There's some, like, decent comedic writing to, like, kind of play up the comic book aspect of everything. But yeah, like, one of the major arcs of this film is completely left until... not even the mid-credits sequence, the post-credits sequence.
Right. I will say, in terms of comedic quality, that I do find the Asgard stuff pretty funny. I'm not sure if the movies... See, the first Thor, I feel like definitely played it for comedy. I'm not so sure about this movie, because it's directed by Alan Taylor, who did, like, Game of Thrones, so this is sort of his territory, I suppose. Yeah. But I still found it funny, you know, like Anthony Hopkins standing there with an eye patch and like a hawk lands on his arm. That to me is really funny. I think that's very amusing.
There's an arch quality to it that I think they're pulling up.
So that still works. I would say the movie, even though I'm mostly just saying negative things, I think the movie is half works. But yeah, I mean, I didn't like it. And I at some point I was thinking, like, can I just like... like, you know, with this giant display of whatever was even happening with, like, a ship in London or something, I'm saying, can I just, like, just go home and read, like, a Don DeLillo book or something? Like, why am I here? Like, what am I doing? This is what this movie does to me. It makes me just want to leave the theater and, like, go home. So, yeah, it's
it's interesting that you say that, because I saw this movie and then immediately went home and I watched X-Men First Class. And then I started reading War and Peace.
Why?
So I don't know what's happening to me.
You started reading War and Peace?
Again, yes.
Well,
I've already read it once.
How many times have you seen X-Men First Class?
A couple. I like that movie.
It's fun, but how many times can you watch it? Anyway.
First class film.
It's a fun film. I guess this is when I get to kind
I guess
of
the
defend
no,
myself,
no, I guess the way I just feel is like after this movie, like I just wanted to go home and just like lie down.
I wanted to see like a better movie, and I still wanted that comic book action. You know, I know we sometimes sound like that's not what we're into, but like I loved X-Men First Class. I'm genuinely excited for the Captain America: The Winter Soldier and the new X-Men film. Mm-hmm. So like I was excited for Thor too, because like I said, Thor was my second favorite of all the Avengers films, even though it was hampered by some shoehorning in of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is hilarious. Because now they're barely bringing that shit up at all.
Right. How do we review this movie without seeing every episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
How do we do that?
Can someone? Are we able to?
Are they going to reference this in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I guess there's going to be like a crossover episode where they come in and they clean it up.
Is that really what's happening?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which I guess maybe is actually better. That way it's not in the movie.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess. But I mean, like, I got shit to do. I can't track all this stuff.
No, I mean, I'm not going to watch it. But
just saying. Danny King, you haven't spoken that much. What did you think of Thor: The Dark World?
Yeah, I don't know, like, I don't know why you guys had expectations for this movie. Basically, like, I've seen the trailer a few times, and it looked pretty bad. And then after the first, like, 10 minutes, when they're just talking about, like, dark elves and shit like that.
Landed on that.
I mean, it's just, like, stupid. And, I mean, I don't even like Lord of the Rings to begin with, but so much of this movie and, like, the Asgard stuff and whatever, it's, like, bad Lord of the Rings. So it's even worse than something I don't like, which is problematic. I do think that, like, some of the comedy is funny. And I actually wish that the movie would, like, just go on more tangents with simple jokes. Like Chris O'Dowd has a scene with Natalie Portman, and there's like no reason for that scene to even happen because it's like she has no interest in meeting anyone. So I don't know like why she would even be on a date in the first place. And it's like a fairly long scene. Like it's probably like 5 or 6 minutes, but at least I'm like laughing and like watching it. But like, I don't know, when you just get to like Asgard and there's elves with like red eyes and they're talking about some substance that will, I don't know, make the world different or something.
It's it'll turn everything to antimatter, I think.
Yeah, like matter and antimatter, like that's just kind of like boring stuff. And I didn't even see the first Thor in theaters, and I watched it on like Netflix Instant before I saw this, and that was like, I mean, I didn't even like that film. Similar problems, even though it's different director. I mean, I didn't think the first Thor, like I didn't think the Shakespearean stuff was funny. I thought it was like mediocre writing that was almost made even worse by like how serious the acting was. And then obviously Thor has like maybe even has more like intergalactic action at the beginning, which is like annoying. But I guess I never really felt like walking out of Thor the Dark World, so which is good. Like, yeah, I mean, like literally I have no expectations for this movie. Like what could you like go in and expect to actually have like it be worth 2 hours of your time? Like it's.
Yeah, that's the thing. Admittedly, I was kind of annoyed because like I went to a matinee and it was still like $12 or something. And like, so it was like $12 and it was like time out of my schedule as well. Like I don't have a world of time this weekend. So the timing is just not very good. So it's like, I got a paper to write here. Like, do I have to sacrifice like however much time for this film? And then
well, here's,
it's just, I don't have time for this. I am an adult.
You better get ready, man, because there's like 1,000 more Marvel films coming out that we're gonna have to see.
Maybe we'll move past it.
Doubtful. Here's the thing. Like, I want to see these films. Like, Danny, when you said you don't know why I had expectations for this, I think that Thor is by far the most interesting and novel of all the comic characters. Because it does bring up, like, it's part of mythology, and it's interesting to see the way that they've adapted it. I like the science fiction clashing with the magic. And honestly, like, Thor, you know, is the valiant young prince who's gotta, you know, buck up and become a man. I mean, that's better than a lot of the other superheroes we're saddled with. Like, you know, Batman and Tony Stark are basically the same guy. Spider-Man is kind of a jerk that I don't enjoy in most of his film adaptations. I actually enjoy a child's cartoon series called the Spectacular Spider-Man more than I've enjoyed any of the actual Spider-Man films. Thank you to my nephew Liam for introducing that to me. It's just weird because I think there's so much here that could be good. And I liked that arch Shakespearean nonsense from the first film because it was fun and it was different and it was interesting. And in this, it just kind of like deadens. And I really thought that we were going to get more of Idris Elba as Heimdall. I thought that we'd get to see more of Jamie Alexander as Sif, who's like the most badass female character that we've been given in a comic book movie yet.
Yeah, she's kind of cool, but she's like not in it.
Her only acts in the entire film are to be shot in profile doing something and then turn and look slightly past the camera. Like, it became a joke at some point. It was awful. And, like, they seem to be setting up a kind of romantic triangle at some point. But, like, we've barely seen her and Thor talking. So, like, I was actually, like, genuinely, like, thrown off by the idea that they might even have a relationship. And then you have the Warriors 3, who are like, it's like if you took three action archetypes from different eras. You have Zachary Levi playing Fandral, who's kind of like the Errol Flynn swashbuckling guy. Then you got Ray Stevenson, who's playing Volstagg, who's like the Gimli the dwarf kind of like gruff murderer. And then you got the other guy, Tadanobu Asano playing Hogan, who's like the samurai. And what do you do with them? You do nothing with them. They're just thrown away. Like, these are the interesting, weird things that we could be watching. Instead of just having Thor come to Earth to snog it up with Natalie Portman for a little bit and argue with his dad three times about what they're going to do, it's just upsetting that there's so much potential and so much of what I really want in a movie that I go to that's called Thor: The Dark World, and that it all kind of gets shifted away. And, like, Loki's in this, and Loki's the only really interesting, emotionally affecting character that the Marvel Universe has been able to create.
Yeah, he's...
Am I wrong about that? Like,
I really like Tom Hiddleston. Like,
I
feel like he's just, I don't know, like, he seems to... Most of the actors in this movie seem to kind of get it,
yeah,
sort of what they're doing, but... At the same time, I don't really know who Christopher Eccleston is. Like, he's not really a name I could tell you anything about.
He was one of the doctors. He was the crazy general in 28 Days Later.
Oh, wow, okay.
He was in Shallow Grave.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the thing is that, like, oh, I guess he was even Doctor Who?
Yeah, that's what I meant when I said one of the doctors.
Oh, right. So I don't fucking know.
I don't watch Doctor Who, but I know enough people who do that I feel like I can just talk shorthand.
I just hate Doctor Who fandom is all. Anyway, let's alienate 0.5% of our audience.
How many major pop culture franchises can we alienate?
That's the thing is, you know, it is such a non-entity, his character.
Well, that's because he's covered in makeup and his voice is, like, distorted.
But he's just kind of...
You could have gotten literally anyone for that part and gotten...
But the thing is, the movie doesn't even try to make that an engaging narrative. Like, it has this lengthy opening scene, which looks like a video game, and then you go to this, and I was thinking, seriously, just do a movie with, like, Thor and Loki again. Like, I'll watch that again. Honestly, yeah. I'll watch that again. It's fine. Just do that. You know, you've got Natalie Portman, you've got Chris O'Dowd, you've got Idris Elba. You have real actors.
These people.
So just do that again. Like, seriously, you can do new things. It's in London. Have a fight in Big Ben or whatever. I don't know, but don't. Okay, so, like, what? This is part of the problem is that you have, you know, Natalie Portman's character goes to, like, some other dimension realm. And this is what I said earlier. She's like, she doesn't think it's a big deal. This is an astrophysicist whose entire life's work has just been reconfigured. And she's just kind of walking around. Just kind of like, oh, whatever. And it's like, oh, my God, I get a cell phone signal here. Which makes no sense. I can't get a cell phone signal in my house. Yeah. So, and I live 2.5 miles from a Verizon store, okay? I can't get a cell phone signal in my house. Like, if you're gonna nitpick realism in one of these movies, then maybe. But no, fuck it. Like, it's played for laughs. And it does bother me how this movie kind of takes what we're
looking
for
is,
and it just sort of pushes it aside for the sake of... It's sort of... It's scene, like, you know what it is? You know, hold on, let me just say. You know what it is? It's inflated sense of scope. That's what it is. It's like taking a movie and, like, it's a balloon and just blowing air into it. And it's just kind of there. And it looks like it's big. It looks like it has scope, but it's the same thing.
But once you let all the air out of it.
If you just poke it, it's going to deflate.
Yeah.
And I am here to poke, okay?
Well, here's my thing. Like,
listen up, motherfuckers. I'm going to poke this movie until it pops.
And the thing about what you're talking about with the cell phone, again, we can talk more in spoilers, which I assume we'll get to very quickly. There's another signifier of what that cell phone signal is supposed to signify that would have made it much more... like, funny and affecting.
Which
in
is?
That scene. They all the stuff on the floor that they find.
Oh.
Like, they didn't. The cell phone was completely unnecessary to that.
Anyway. I mean, am I wrong, or is that just really stupid that the things are there?
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that apparently, like, the universe is comprised of, like, four different places, all of which is, like, 1 acre big.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into spoilers. I think we've generally wrapped up our feelings on this. Not a complete waste of time, but, like, a real, real massive waste of potential for me. I mean, I'm not upset that I saw it. I'm not talking, like, Hobbit levels of, like, vitriol, but, like, guys, there's so much to do. Like,
I'd honestly, I'd rather watch The Hobbit again.
Okay,
like,
well,
honestly.
That's insanity, and I'll never understand that.
I'll watch the extended Hobbit before I watch this
13
again.
Minutes of extra footage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Masterpiece.
So we're going to talk about spoilers now for Thor: The Dark World, because there is quite a few spoilery things in here. What I was talking about with the previous thing, just to clear it up, since that was very opaque what we said. Natalie Portman's in a, like, they're stranded on a barren dark world, the dark world of the title, I believe. And she gets a cell phone call from Chris O'Dowd from earlier, so I guess bring that character back full circle. And that's when she realizes that they're in this cave of an entire planet. They have found the one cave where there is a gravitational disturbance which will allow them to pass between worlds. And then they see shoes and a can that she had thrown earlier and the car keys to a car that had been left there. And I mean, yeah, like, why do you need that cell phone? And that extra level of, like, wait, would that actually work? When you have all that other stuff, like, you have all those other fragments that you could use to put together. And it's just, like decisions like that kind of drive me nuts. But as I was saying earlier, Loki is in this movie, and he has by far the most emotionally affecting scenes, and the things that I was looking forward to the most from a Thor film, because I thought they were going to keep up that arch, grand operatic nonsense from the first film. And I keep calling it nonsense, but what I really mean is, like, just, there's so much of it. It's so big that it's, like, impossible to take seriously, but it works. And at some point in this movie, his mother, Frigga, played by Rene Russo, is killed. And everyone else is kind of like, ah, she's dead. We have to go murder some people. And he's the only one who seems to care, like, beyond a plot point. He's the only one that gives that death any emotional resonance whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't think she should have died. Like, Rene Russo is pretty great.
Well, here's the other thing. Like, apparently Loki can get picked up and swung around by the Hulk and live, but Rene Russo takes a knife to the spleen and she's dead immediately.
Yeah, that was just a bad call. Like, he shouldn't have killed that actress. Like, she's...
Anyway.
Poor judgment there.
Oh, Danny. But yeah, I mean, like, there's a scene when Thor goes to look at Loki, and Loki appears to be standing up, and his room appears to be in order, but apparently that was a hologram, and his room's actually in shambles, and, like, he's, like, beaten the walls bloody, and he's just a wreck. Like, that was a scene that delivered on the promise of what these movies could be.
Yeah, weird Raging Bull homage.
One of my problems with this film, though, was the use of the holograms. Did anyone else have that problem?
Because
after a while, once you figure out what's going on, like, you're just like, oh, I know everything now.
Well, see, the last... We're in spoilers, right?
Yes, we are.
So the last hologram thing is really problematic, because one of the few moments where the movie seemed to have taken... maybe like a chance of some sort, is just negated.
Yeah.
You think, oh wow, Loki died. That's kind of interesting, because he's one of the most popular characters, and it's like, nope, he'll be back for the Avengers Age of Ultron. He'll be back.
Yeah, can't wait,
that's
man.
That's the other crazy thing, is not even that. Like, I thought you were going to talk about the when they cut off Thor's hand.
That too, oh, actually, yeah. That was kind of neat. And then, it's all just, nope. We revert back to where we were. It's funny how, you know, like, I remember in the Avengers, pretty much the only moment in that entire movie that surprised me is when the S.H.I.E.L.D. What's his name?
Agent
what's the Coulson. S.H.I.E.L.D. guy?
Agent Coulson.
Yeah, when he died. Like, that was the only moment where I wasn't expecting that. That's kind of interesting. And now he's back on the TV show.
I know.
They just go, no, he's fine. That's what this whole thing is. It's a con. They present you this thing that seems fascinating. They, at least, if not fascinating, at least, like, they're taking a chance. And then they go, no, he's still around. You're good. it's just like, after a while, it's just like, oh, fuck you. Seriously, why am I watching this?
Yeah.
You're good. Come to the next film. All the characters will be back, Loki included.
Yeah, it's really nuts.
Yeah, and so you know what you can do. It's sort of like that story about Harrison Ford said he wanted Han Solo to die in Return of the Jedi, and then George Lucas said, we can't sell a dead Han Solo, you know, action figure. That's what it's like. It's like, well, you can't sell a Loki action figure. You can't sell an armless Thor. You know, you
Are
have
you kidding?
To.
If they gave Thor like some magical robot hand, you don't think they would have made
true.
Like a Thor action figure with detachable hand and reattachable robot
yes,
action hand?
Point taken. But anyway, you can't sell
the
like
hell out of that.
You know, if you can't have a Loki toy figure. And I don't, it's just, there's not, I would be more accepting of it if they had established some kind of narrative arc in this film with the character where his return has a, where his return has like a resonance instead of, yeah, he's just going to be back. Like
yeah.
he'll be, that's what it is. It's just, oh, he'll be back.
Well, the other crazy ass thing is that like the one arc that could be said to be had in the movie is about Thor possibly becoming king, even though that's glanced on barely. And then at the end, he denies it to his father, and his father accepts it. But it's not actually his goddamn father.
That'll set it up for three.
Which makes me ask, did Loki kill Odin?
No, I don't know.
Like, that's a big question. Like, who fucking knows? Oh, my God.
who fucking knows?
What we were talking about earlier, also the other arc. So we have the Thor might become king arc, and then the Thor and Jane arc, which you know I was invested in their relationship, and it's a post credit sequence. Like it ends with like, oh, Thor had to go, blah blah blah, and then they're all just sitting there depressingly eating Shredders for breakfast, and like you would think that in a movie like this, they would end on that grand romantic moment where Thor comes back and they kiss and everything's wonderful, but they don't. They end on Loki smiling at the camera because we now know that Loki is the only compelling character. And, you know, we get a weird mid-credit sequence, which honestly looked terrible. Like, looked absolutely terrible. And then,
oh no, it looked like a New Line Cinema movie from the mid-90s.
Yeah, it looked like worse than Demolition Man.
What's great is that that's actually not only was that nonsensical, bad-looking scene a preview of Guardians of the Galaxy, but it was directed by the guy who's making that movie.
Oh, fantastic.
Who's that?
James Gunn.
Okay.
Who made like Slither and Super.
It looked like it was shot on a cell phone. Like
it looks quite bad. Yeah,
it looked like I've seen Instagram videos that look better than that.
And not only that, the scene. Okay, I was just maybe I can. I just closed this tab. Maybe I can open it. Okay, so I was like, I had no idea what that was. Like
yeah, I
had no idea what
on.
I was watching. And I appreciate that if they're going to do because it's nothing but fan service, and they'll be the first person to tell you that. So I'm not going to judge them on that. It's fan service, right? I do appreciate having the fan service kind of saved for like when normal people leave, right?
Right.
And I'm not, let me just say, I that might sound bad, I am not one of the normal people. Like I stuck around. So I am implicating myself here. I am part of the problem. But then I see this sequence and I'm thinking, what? It's 2.5 minutes. I don't understand a single word that's spoken. There's something about gemstones and like
infinity
one down,
gems and
yeah.
One down, five to go.
One down,
and
five to go.
The Tesseract is one of them. And there's a really weird like wind-up doll kind of nurse figure.
And
then
Benicio
was that Benicio del
Toro? That's him, yeah.
That was him. Oh my God. I was like,
Benicio del Toro as like a 80s clubber or something. Like it's
he reminded me of Tommy Lee Jones from JFK.
Oh my God, Clay Shaw.
Yeah.
Wow, imagine if Clay Shaw was a character in Guardians of the Galaxy. That'd be pretty yeah. amazing. And you bring back Kevin Bacon and Joe Pesci so they could have gay sex. No. That was it was just like
but
just what?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I'll just say this. I had to look up an article on the interweb. What about what is happening here?
Yeah, I didn't have any idea. I was happy to see Sif again. I won't lie. I like Sif. Like
yeah.
some Sif in my movies. But like I was just like, what is happening? Why is this happening? Then the crazy thing is that the final credit sequence is actually relevant to the movie we just saw.
Right. It's what I had said earlier.
Yeah, it's Thor coming back, him and Jane embrace and kiss, and then there's a massive two-story-tall lizard beast chasing birds through like an industrial park in London, which is hilarious.
Too bad for London.
If there's not a shot of someone taking care of that in the next film, I'm going to be really, really kind of
disturbed. You have to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Tuesdays at 8 on ABC.
Oh, man. But I mean, like, that's the misaligned, what's the word I'm looking for?
Intent?
No. Not objective.
I don't know. It's problematic.
Anyway, it's problematic. It's problematic because it shows that the intention of this film was to set up further films rather than to deliver any kind of emotionally affecting story. Because, A, the movie ends on a cliffhanger with Loki. B, the movie ends a second time on a nonsensical collector moment that looks like it was shot with a flip phone from, or a flip camera from like 6 years ago. And then C, it ends another time on what's actually relevant to the film. And it delivers a final character note for us to leave on. But then undercuts that by saying that a massive monster that we have seen in devour a sentient being whole is still running around London unimpeded. So anyway, Thor the Dark World in theaters now. Any final thoughts before we go?
Maybe it'll play better on HBO.
Maybe. Again, man, I'm disappointed more than anything else. I really wanted this to be good. Sad. Anyway, let's talk about what's coming to Blu-ray and DVD. Biggest release, I would say, is Man of Steel, which we...
That's the Zack Snyder Superman film.
Correct, starring Henry Cavill. I would say we had some differing opinions on this film.
Oh, yeah. It's I hated it. It's terrible.
I thought it was
terrible. And I never want to see it again. And
I would
it's
not,
actually...
I would
it's
not
part
buy
of why
it,
I
but I liked it.
It's part of why I think that like just Batman versus Superman or whatever it's called, like I can't do it. I can't do it to begin with because it's a terrible idea. But after this film, let's talk about there's City Lights.
Yeah,
Charlie
City Lights
Chaplin
is coming out. It's Francis Ha also coming to Blu-ray. I'm the only person who didn't like that, so yeah. F.W. Murnau's Nosferatu coming to Blu-ray as well. I'm excited about that because AFI Silver, apparently the person who usually lended them a print for their not-so-silent cinema, sold it, so they couldn't get it this year, so I didn't get to see it with live musical accompaniment. I don't know why they're releasing it now and not like 2 weeks ago in time for Halloween, whatever.
Yeah.
Turbo is also coming to DVD and Blu-ray. That's a fun, cute kids film.
Yeah.
JFK, hey.
Yeah, JFK re-released in a new box set. And also, similarly, it's funny you just mentioned JFK, now it's here. All the President's Men is coming to Blu-ray, so that's cool.
Some other new films, Blackfish, the documentary that was getting a lot of buzz about the treatment of captive orcas. Prince Avalanche, newest film by David Gordon Green.
I gotta give a shout out the German film called Barbara, directed by Christian Petzold. I saw that came out last year. I saw that in January, and I really like that film. That's a very good film. I'd like to see it again. And I was actually a few months ago I was worried that it wasn't going to be released because it was distributed by a very small company. It played at my independent theater for like 1 week, and I saw it on a Sunday afternoon. I was the only person in the theater. But it was quite good. I bet you'd like that, Brian.
Okay.
I bet you'd like that. That's a very good movie.
Now, Not Fade Away is apparently being... That was already released, right?
That's just like a reissue.
Okay.
One thing to mention about Barbara really quick is that the Museum of Modern Art this month is starting a series about the Berlin School, of which that director, Christian Petzold, is a member... quote member and a lot of his other films are showing there And Barbara is too. So that was my first film I saw from him.
All right.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's what's coming out to Blu-ray. Let's talk about what's coming out to theaters next week. We will be talking about, for anyone who's interested, we will be talking about Blue is the Warmest Color, which has been expanding throughout the weeks. Coming to very limited release next week, however, is Nebraska, the newest film by director Alexander Payne. It stars Bruce Dern and Will Forte. Also coming to wide release, The Best Man Holiday, which stars Morris Chestnut, who is a very charismatic screen presence, as well as Taye Diggs, who is also an insanely charismatic screen presence. Yeah, these are the only two films coming out. I'm surprised that there is, like, such a lull where only two films, one of them very small, is coming out.
Yeah, well, The Wolf of Wall Street was supposed to come out that day, but now it's pushed to Christmas. I think that was I think this push only happened like a month or so ago, so I think they kind of had to hurry that one along, and maybe it was too soon for anybody to.
Was there a reason that The Wolf of Wall Street, is it just like finishing it up?
It was supposed to come on November 15th, and then it was just like the movie was like so massive. Apparently the first cut of it was like 4 hours long or something.
That's how Marty works.
Just release that. Like I will see that. No questions asked. No, I will watch. And apparently, also, it's apparently it's like rated. It would be rated, if not NC-17, rather close.
Okay.
But how quickly would you see like a 4 hour NC-17 Wolf of Wall Street? Like I would go immediately.
I mean, yeah. I'm still waiting for my like 4 hour long NC-17 Gangs in New York.
That's true. Yeah. We'll never see that.
No, we won't. That's just like the 6 hour cut of The Thin Red Line. Like, it's just lost forever.
Well, I mean, the 6 hour, that's like a different thing. That's something which was, like, that was not, yeah. Not to get into semantics, just like The Thin Red Line, be happy with what you have, because that's it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the movie. Gangs of New York is like a different, that's actually like someone getting screwed over.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear the story, digression, did you ever hear the story about sort of like the Gangs of New York? There's sort of the two versions of it.
I think I did.
So, like, there's the version that everybody has seen. It's the only version that most people have seen. And Martin Scorsese, being a very diplomatic, very much a gentleman, has said that that's his director's cut, and there's not going to be any other versions. That's his movie. But privately, I guess he distributed, like, VHS copies of a different version of the movie to his friends. Like, he gave copies like Paul Schrader and Robert De Niro and people like that. Sort of his old compatriots, and he said to them, like, this is my intended version of the movie, but I'm not allowed to say that publicly. And there's actually, there are, like, you can actually read, like, a few, some people got their hands on copies of it, and you can read about it, and it sounds like a better movie that we will never see, so that's great.
Damn it. Well,
anyway,
that's a depressing thing to end on. So let's talk about some films that we saw on our own this week. Danny King, let's start with you.
Ah, yes. Well, quite, yes. I saw a print of a really good Abel Ferrara film called Dangerous Game, which was made the year after he and Harvey Keitel made Bad Lieutenant, which is another great film. And in Dangerous Game, Harvey Keitel plays a director, basically like a stand-in for Ferrara, who goes to L.A. to make a movie with Madonna and an actor named James Russo. And the whole movie is basically like, it just seems kind of like a confessional. Bad Lieutenant was made with a really sort of kind of formal energy. And it was a kind of a very stylistically enjoyable film. Dangerous Game, almost looks like it was shot on video a lot of the time. And there is some video footage in the actual film because he's like directing and looking at dailies. But even like just the normal scenes look really like low budget and very raw. And, you know, I need to read a little bit more about Ferrara, but apparently he's kind of he was like a notorious kind of drug user. And there are a few like amazing moments in the movie because the film Keitel is directing is about a husband and a wife who have been living this very like hedonistic lifestyle, and then the wife finds God, and the husband's angry. So basically every scene of the movie within a movie is James Russo yelling at Madonna, like, I'm going to fuck who I want to fuck, and I'm going to do coke, and I'm going to drink booze. And it's very over the top. But then Harvey Keitel eventually takes the actor aside, and the actor has been drinking and doing drugs in between scenes. So he's actually like drunk and high while he's doing these scenes. But Keitel doesn't think he's doing good enough. So he tells him, you either have to do more coke and more booze or none at all. And it's like, this is a really great line, because he's like, you're right in this middle ground where you're not, it's just not right. He's like, you either have to black out completely or just be straight. And so that was a funny line.
Hmm. All right. Nick Newman, what about yourself?
I've never seen Dangerous Game, but you should look up an interview that Abel Ferrara did on Conan O'Brien.
I watched that.
It's amazing. It's really amazing.
I wonder what he's on in that interview.
So anyway, I guess this is kind of appropriate. The notorious Frederick Wiseman, the infamous, I don't know, is he infamous or notorious, but the well-regarded Frederick Wiseman has a new documentary out this weekend called At Berkeley. If you live in New York, it's playing at the IFC Center, and I'm sure it'll expand to other places in due time. And in class, actually, this week we watched – I don't think this was like intentional on the teacher's part, but we watched one of his earliest works, High School, from 1968, which is indeed a documentary about high school.
Okay.
And sort of some of the day-to-day business therein. I really quite like this movie. I found it to be – just beautifully composed, and it's kind of, I really appreciate the aspect of a high school life that he decides to focus in on, and kind of what that says about his overall vision of the film. And yet, I also hated the experience of watching it, because even though it's from 1968, it brought me back to my own high school experience pretty significantly. And in class, in our discussion, I said that although I won't compare high school to like being in the Holocaust, this is sort of like my own Night in Fog, in a way. Like, watching this, I just thought to myself, you know, do you guys know Night in Fog?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
The Alain René documentary. Mm-hmm. Watching this, I was just thinking, like, never again am I going to experience this. Which, you know, if high school is my own Holocaust, then I guess I've lived a pretty privileged life, yeah. I suppose. But It was a really like stirring documentary, and what's most fascinating about it is how he kind of doesn't select a viewpoint about the system. He doesn't really present anything in a particularly didactic or polemicizing manner. It's sort of about what you're bringing to it and how much you're agreeing with or disagreeing with certain setups, the way these systems operate. And from what I understand, at Berkeley, actually, works in a similar way. I'm very much looking forward to seeing that. So this was like an interesting precursor. There was high school, and now there's going to be college in his au revoir. And no, I rather liked high school. The film, not the, you know.
Not the actual act of going to high school.
Yes. So I don't know if it's really available. I think you can maybe – let me look this up. I think you can probably watch it on YouTube. The thing is that most of his films aren't really available unless it's from like a website. And even then, the DVDs are like $30. And the movie itself is only like 75 minutes. Maybe you can find it online. I'm not encouraging piracy per se. It's just that you can't really find it elsewhere. So if you want to watch it, you kind of have to look. But yeah, High School by Frederick Wiseman. Liked it very much.
Okay. I guess I'll stick with one that I already mentioned. I watched X-Men First Class. I'll keep it comic book.
Keep it classy.
Yeah, man. I enjoy the hell out of this film. They got some really good actors to come in and play the younger versions of Magneto and Professor X. We all know I'm a fan of Rose Byrne, so it's great to see her. And yeah, I don't know. I enjoy the films of Matthew Vaughn. Yeah, thank you.
Maybe.
I enjoy the films of Matthew Vaughn, And I like the stylish direction that he brings to this and kind of the energy that he affords it. And apparently the movie was made, like, really quickly. Like, they had to rework the scripts and everything. And yet, I feel like it's got a firmer handle on its tail than Thor: The Dark World did. So, and even most of the Marvel films. It's much better than Thor: The Dark World. It's much better than the last two Iron Man films, and probably even the first Iron Man film. I think amongst Marvel films, the only one that might beat it for me is Captain America. So, yeah.
Did Matthew Vaughn direct Delivery Man?
No, he did not.
Oh, okay.
Oh my
is the
God.
Character in Delivery Man actually a delivery man?
Yeah, he does.
If he are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Why is that a problem for you?
I'm never going to see that movie. So let's be clear. But just that's the deal. I don't know. Let's watch Starbuck instead.
Remember talking about
Starbuck? Weren't we talking about
we
that?
We did
at one
talk
point?
About Starbuck once. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lie. I'll watch one or both of them. They look. I don't know. It looks. It's probably emotionally manipulative as hell, but it looks affecting. So.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's what I'm gonna say. X-Men First Class. Check it out wherever you can find it. If you haven't already, I enjoy the hell out of that film. That's it. That's it for today. Next week we'll be talking about Blue is the Warmest Color. So tune in for that. And that's all. So let's say where we can be found. Danny King, where can we find you in the meantime?
Thefilmstage.com, thekingbulletin.com, and twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And Nick Newman.
On the Wikipedia page for Delivery Man, it says that Chris Pratt gained around 60 pounds for his role as the friend of Vaughn's character.
Oh, God.
That can't be true. Like, that can't possibly be true, right?
Wait, what?
That's what it says. I think that maybe it's for, like, Guardians of the Galaxy or something, where you get to gain muscle or something.
That would actually be really sad if that's true.
He is a devoted actor. He gained 60 pounds for Delivery Man.
The best friend sidekick character in Delivery Man?
I imagine that's a reference to Guardians of the Galaxy. I hope it's a reference to that.
That's weird, because I know that he was talking about the fact that he had to gain weight for a film. But, I mean, in that trailer, he does not look...
Looks kind of the same.
He looks kind of the same as he did on, on Parks and Rec.
Anyway.
But, I mean, he slimmed down for fucking that one where they kill Osama bin Laden, Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, that one. So, yes, anyway. Thefilmstage.com and twitter.com/Nick_Newman and editing the Wikipedia page for Delivery Man to properly reflect Chris Pratt's involvement in his physical preparation.
All right. Anyway, I can be found online at twitter.com/BrianJRowan, my personal site, dearfilm.net, and thefilmstage.com. So join us next week when we'll be talking about Blue is the Warmest Color.
As a young man... Excuse me. Wow.
What the fuck was that?
I've barely spoken at all this weekend, so just when I have to say like more than six words, that's what happens. Excuse me. I don't have much. Excuse me. Maybe there'll be.
I'm leaving all this in.
I mean, I've said before. Okay. Should I? Okay.
Yeah.
I have a Thor throat. Okay. So I